Welcome, welcome, welcome. I would like to welcome you to episode 411 of the Unpopular Podcast. This is the man, the myth, the legend, Jalen Hunter. And here at the Unpopular Podcast, normally you guys who agree with me, I'm asking you to hear me out. Before we start, I am feeling a little under the weather. I think I have a head cold, so I apologize if my voice sounds a little, he has a coldie. I'm sick and I'm trying to push through, so I apologize if the sound of my voice is kind of crazy, you know what I mean? So, but where I want to start this episode is an acknowledgement. I love the time we are in when we talk about sports. I love it. I love it because when you look 30, 40 years from now, I can honestly say that we are living through one of the best eras in sports history. You know how our grandmothers, grandfathers, people, you know, of older ilk talk about sports back in the day and have such a joy, such a passion talking about people like Bill Russell or Wilt Chamberlain, I'm sorry, or Michael Jordan or Larry Bird or, you know, Joe Namath and stuff like that. They have such a joy speaking about that because I can imagine what it was like living through those moments, living through the greatness of Michael Jordan. Seeing as though now the best way to get, you know, greatness from Michael Jordan is watching highlights, I'm almost sure when you hear people talking about how great he was that lived in that moment, it was much different than what it is just watching highlights. So when I look forward, you know, when I look 30, 40 years from now and I talk to my kids and my grandkids, Lord willing, I'm going to, it's a beauty to say that I lived through one of the best eras in sports history. Like, think about it. In my era, I got LeBron James. I got Tom Brady. I got my personal favorite football player of all time, Megatron, Calvin Johnson. I got Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Giannis, Nikola Jokic. Like, we are in such a great time in sports. Now, why am I starting with this? Because in that list that I just described, now, obviously, that's not the only players that would be on that list. But one name that I did not say is Aaron Donald. Again, going back to my analogy and going back to how I started this, you know how people talk about Lawrence Taylor and how just different he was on a football field and how different it was watching him play football? Now, obviously, I'm never going to get that chance, and I didn't get that chance to watch Lawrence Taylor live. So when people say that he was the greatest defensive player we've ever seen, I'm going to acquiesce to them because I never witnessed that. I never witnessed a team having to literally change their entire offensive scheme because of Lawrence Taylor. But I did see that with Aaron Donald. I'm not here saying Aaron Donald is better than X or Aaron Donald is better than Y. I'm not here sparking any debates. What I'm here saying is, one, congratulations to Aaron Donald because he initially, or officially, I'll say, announced his retirement from football. But this is me giving him his flowers, giving him his kudos. There have been a litany of incredible defensive players that I've seen in my life. Whether we talk about Ray Lewis, whether we talk about J.J. Watt, whether we talk about Troy Polamalu, whether we talk about Ed Reed. I've seen some incredible defensive football players in my lifetime. But in my opinion, I think that Aaron Donald stands above the rest. Now, again, I'm not here debating eras. I'm not here debating if he is the best or not. What I'm saying is, when we talk about the gold standard of football and when we talk about the greatest that I've seen, I have not seen a more dominant defensive player than Aaron Donald. Think about the fact that as a defensive tackle, he was getting double and triple teamed damn near every single play. He's won 3 Defensive Player of the Year awards. He has a Super Bowl with the LA Rams. And from 2014 to essentially his last season, which was last year, 2023, he was amongst the most dominant defensive players we have ever seen, in my opinion. And it's honestly not just my opinion. Now, I'm not going to rank where he is, because it's hard for me to rank people that I've never seen. Like, I never got the pleasure to see Reggie Wayne. I just saw highlights and stuff. Or Mean Joe Green, you know? But there's times when you can just look and they're just, you know, that's just different. Like, again, my all-time favorite football player, Calvin Johnson. When you match the speed with the height, with the just sheer talent and greatness, I don't know if we've ever seen at least wide receiver like Megatron. Now, again, I'm not here saying he's the greatest wide receiver. I'm just saying he's my favorite. It was such a joy and a pleasure watching Megatron, because I can honestly say I've never seen something like that. Just like LeBron James. I've never seen something like LeBron James. I've never seen a shooter like Steph Curry. I've never seen an offensive weapon like Kevin Durant. I've never seen a defensive player like Aaron Donald. And for me, he will go down as arguably the greatest defensive player we've ever seen. And I said this about Jason Kelce. I briefly said this about Jason Peters. No, I'm sorry, not Jason Peters. I apologize. Fletcher Cox. And I will say this about Aaron Donald. One, congratulations for an incredible career. And I think it's always beautiful when you can go out on your own terms. Because I don't think people understand how rare it is that a football player can go out on their own terms. And what I mean by that is leave when they want to leave. Mm-hmm. Not just leave because they're injured, or leave because they got cut and nobody wants them, or leave because they're just not at the same level that they've been at. See, I'm going to say, man, congratulations to Aaron Donald. He is undoubtedly one of, if not the greatest defenders I have ever seen. Oh. And it just goes back to my point that I started this episode with. I don't know what your faith looks like. I'm not here debating anybody's faith. If you believe in God, you can believe in God. If you don't believe in God, you don't have to believe in God. That's your prerogative. And I'm not judging whatever side of the spectrum you land. But I'm a very spiritual person.
You know, I have a strong faith in God. And I thank God for allowing me to live in this era of sports. Not just because, you know, social media and the way that we view sports is changing almost daily. I think about that, man. Like now that I'm really talking about it, think about that. 4, 5, 6 years ago, there wasn't an Amazon Prime. There wasn't, well, as far as Amazon Prime to watch games. You know, now we have games on HBO Max. There wasn't all these streaming services. Now you can get games directly on your phone, like, and you don't even have to be in that region. It's crazy, but I'm happy because, again, 20, 30, 40 years from now, I can, when you're in the barbershop or you're around friends or you're talking to people that are younger than you, I can honestly say that I lived in one of, if not the greatest eras of sports. And Aaron Donald's name, when we talk about greatness and when we talk about, you know, what made sports sports in my era, you can't have a extensive NFL talk, NFL conversation, and not mention Aaron Donald. And I think that is why he is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, defensive player I've ever seen. So again, congratulations to you. Let's move forward. We're in this free agency period, and last episode we talked about the salary cap spike. Last episode we gave a couple of talks and discussions about some moves that happened day one and the first few days of free agency. And as we sit here today, there is a team that it's very interesting to talk about because on one hand, they're making a lot of great moves with free agency. But on the other hand, they've put themselves behind the eight ball on one of the most important decisions of their franchise moving forward, and that is the Chicago Bears. Now, you've heard my take on what they should do with Justin Fields, whether they should trade Justin Fields or keep Justin Fields. I have stood on the, if you're going to keep Justin Fields, surround him with more reliable pieces. And not just that, because that also can be the argument if they trade Justin Fields and bring on Caleb Williams, seeing as though they have the number one overall pick. And what's so interesting to me, and what's so funny about this situation is they did just that. But it's about the timeline that we're discussing. You see, when you look at the Chicago Bears right now, there's no way that you can't say that they're, just by the moves that they have made, some incredible moves in free agency. I mean, you got DeAndre Swift. You got Keenan Allen. They just traded the Chargers for Keenan Allen. Montez Sweat. You got him last season, but you still have him. As we look, the pieces that for years we have been screaming the Chicago Bears to get for Justin Fields, they're finally getting at the end of his tenure. And respectfully, this whether you keep Justin Fields or not, you don't want a rookie quarterback or any quarterback to come into a situation and not have the best chance of winning. That is the biggest issue that I have with the Chicago Bears, because I don't think, whether we talk about how many offensive coordinators he's had, how many coaches he's had, how many poor coaches he's had, I don't think that the Chicago Bears have put Justin Fields in the best position to win his entire career. I'm not taking away from some of the shortcomings that he has experienced and he has as a quarterback. What I'm saying is they have not, when I say they, I mean the organization, the Chicago Bears, have not done enough to help him overcome some of those shortcomings. Which I think is so funny that now that his tenure is over, that's when they're starting to reload. That's when they're starting to get pieces. But that is the issue that we're seeing here. The Chicago Bears now find themselves in a situation that I don't think they foresee themselves being in, and you can kind of categorize as the worst case scenario. You see, going into free agency, there were a plethora of, let's say, ideal destinations that Justin Fields could go to. Whether we talk about the Atlanta Falcons, we've talked about that ad nauseum and how they chose Kirk Cousins over Justin Fields. Whether we talk about the Vikings, and we're going to talk about the Vikings a little bit more later on in the show, but the Vikings, seeing as though they lost Kirk Cousins, you would think, okay, well, he may be able to go to the Vikings, even though it is a divisional rival. At this point, you don't really have much options. Yeah, but they got Sam Darnold, and more than likely, they're probably going to look in the draft, seeing as though that this is shaping up to be a quarterback-rich draft. Well, you could say maybe not the Colts, because Anthony Richardson's coming back. Outside of the top few quarterback destinations, maybe the Pittsburgh Steelers, because the Steelers went and got Russell Wilson. So outside of the top few teams, while there were destinations, if those didn't work, you were looking at a really questionable, let's say, questionable field of teams for Justin Fields, no pun intended. And the worst case scenario is you get to this point. Actually, no, the worst case scenario is after the draft, Justin Fields is still on the roster. I heard Harry Douglas, shouts out to him, ESPN analyst. I heard a Harry Douglas say that it would be pretty much malpractice if you have Justin Fields and Caleb Williams on the same team. Because what you're hearing now is because things didn't go the way that the Chicago Bears thought they were going to go, Justin Fields could possibly be on the team as a backup. And I think that's not going to work. And that's not going to work, not because Justin Fields isn't good or Caleb Williams won't be good. To be a backup quarterback, you have to accept being a backup quarterback. Not saying that there's not, you don't strive to be a starting quarterback, but you have to accept being a backup quarterback. And there is not one report out there saying that Justin Fields expects to be a backup quarterback. Now, I'm sure that he's going to say everything that he's supposed to say if asked, or if that's the ultimate thing that happens to him. But he still feels he is a starting quarterback, especially when you look at where he was drafted. The fact that you would still possibly have him on the team and draft Caleb Williams, that's the absolute worst case scenario. But right now, it looks like we're barreling down to that situation, because I don't see another destination right now that is ideal for Justin Fields. You could say the New England Patriots, but I don't know if he'll be able to fit with Gerard Mayo and just how that team is run. Not to mention, they're probably going to look through the draft. You could say Washington, but Washington has a number two overall pick, and more than likely, they're going to look in the draft. So why I say that this is barreling down to the worst case scenario, because right now it's not a good scenario, seeing as though the top 1, 2, and 3 destinations right now have a quarterback, and Justin Fields was projected to be one of those. That's a problem. Now, if you want to say, okay, well, Justin Fields, we're going to keep Justin Fields and we're going to trade the number one overall pick, great. But every report has come out pretty much saying, no, the Bears have no indication that they are trading the number one overall pick. So it's looking more and more apparent, as unfortunate as it is, that Justin Fields more than likely will be a backup quarterback come next season. And I think that that's the worst case scenario for him. And that's the worst case scenario, honestly, for any team that gets him. Because, again, you have to accept being a backup quarterback. And I don't think that Justin Fields has accepted that. And honestly, I don't know if Justin Fields is a backup. Not saying he shouldn't be in the league. What I'm saying is he's still – we've seen flashes, especially last year with him and his connection with DJ Moore – we've seen last year that he has the signs of being, and he could be a high-end starter. So wherever he goes, kind of like the same issue to a lesser extent, obviously, than Cam Newton. One of the biggest reasons why Cam Newton's not in the league is because the name Cam Newton is too big to be a backup. Because I think that he's I don't know if he's still a starter at this point, obviously, but Cam Newton is still good enough to be a backup quarterback. If Nathan Peterman is getting signed, you for damn sure can not convince me in saying that Cam Newton isn't a backup. If Nick Mullins continues to get a shot, Cam Newton is good enough to be a backup, but it's the name. And I don't think teams want to touch the name Cam Newton. Not saying he's done anything wrong, but and Cam Newton was, I think Cam Newton said this as well. Anytime there is a bad game, anytime that it doesn't look ideal for the current starting quarterback, every question is going to be about Cam Newton. And that could cause a distraction. That could hinder the confidence and the, let's say, team chemistry moving forward. So that's one of the biggest reasons why Cam Newton's not in the league anymore. I think the same thing is going to happen with Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields is too big of a name right now, and I think he's still good enough to be a starting quarterback. So if he is a backup, you know, I think the one team that could be perfect for Justin Fields, seeing as though they do need a starting quarterback, is the Vegas Raiders. But one of the biggest reasons why Justin Fields still is on the Bears is because of the quote-unquote asking price. No one is going to give up a first-round pick or a second-round pick for a quarterback that the team that is trying to get rid of the quarterback has expressed that they don't want the quarterback. So why am I giving up so much when you're kind of backing yourself more and more day after day into a corner? Because just as much as I'm saying this, just as much as shouts out to Harry Douglas, just as much as he says it or anybody says it, the Chicago Bears understand that I think the worst case scenario would be draft night if we still have the number one overall pick and Justin Fields is still on this team. So when we talk about worst case scenarios, the Chicago Bears are, it's very hard to praise or look at their free agent moves because it's been great. If you just look solely at the free agent moves, it's been great. Swift, really good pickup. Keenan Allen, really good pickup. On top of that, you still have Cole Kmet. You still have DJ Moore. That is a great situation to step in, whether you're Justin Fields, whether you're Caleb Love, or Caleb Williams, I'm sorry. The issue is, who is it going to be? And just like I know, just like the NFL knows, just like every single person knows, it will be, let's just, if we want to put it lightly, let's say extremely awkward if come draft night and Caleb Williams' name is heard going to the Chicago Bears as the number one overall pick if Justin Fields is still on that roster. I think that is the worst, and I mean absolute worst case scenario. And as we sit here today, if we look at the landscape of the league today, the days that continue to go on and Justin Fields is still on this team, it's getting closer and closer to that reality. And that would be an extreme worst case scenario. But we'll see. Something that I wanted to touch base on, I didn't want to just let this slip by, and that was Sam Howell getting traded from the Commanders to the Seattle Seahawks. A lot of people want to hear my take on how I feel about what happened with Sam Howell and how he didn't work with the Commanders and if this is the right move for the Commanders. Or if this was the right move for the Commanders, seeing as though it was done. This might come as a shock to some people. But I don't think Sam Howell was a bad quarterback. When you put up some of the numbers that he had, especially early on in the season, you can't be a bad quarterback putting up some of those numbers. There was a point in the season where he was leading the league in passing yards. What I think the issue was with Sam Howell, especially Sam Howell in Washington, is, I mean, if we want to be honest with it, when you're going to a franchise that doesn't have a recent history of winning, when you're going to a franchise that a lot of people can consider a poverty-stricken franchise as far as some of the moves that they made in free agency, some of the moves that they made in the draft, some of the trades that they've essentially made, and ultimately the lack of success you've seen in the last few years. It is incredibly tough being the next up. Because when you're not viewed as a bridge quarterback, you're viewed as, and hopefully looked up or looked as, the franchise changing quarterback. And that is not Sam Howell at all. Now, that's no offense to him, but that's just what it is. And the issue with Sam Howell, the issue with his time with Washington is they viewed him as that. And they touted him as that. The issue with that and the reason why you can't do that is because it brings on extremely hard expectations, not just on him, but on the franchise. You built up this player
to be the next X or the next Y. And they were never good enough to do that. A lot of times I talk about the different type of quarterbacks that we have in the league. And there's two types of quarterbacks. Cam Newton essentially said there's game changers and there's game managers. I look at it as there's quarterbacks that can do a lot with a little, and there's quarterbacks that can do a little with a lot. Now, the quarterbacks that can do a little with a lot, that sounds bad, but I look at it as those are the quarterbacks that need everything to go right. They need a good offensive line. They need solid weapons. They need a good defense, good coaching staff. Those quarterbacks are useful. Those are the Jimmy G's. At this point of his career right now, you can have an argument that that's also Russell Wilson. Those quarterbacks are still good, but they need a lot to go right. But then you have the other quarterbacks. You have the quarterbacks that they're still going to be great no matter who they have. The Patrick Mahomes, the Josh Allens, the Lamar Jacksons, the Joe Burrows. The issue that Sam Howell found himself in, and that's honestly no fault to him. It was the promotion. It was how he was viewed. It was how he was touted. A lot of people, especially in the Washington organization, wanted him to be in that can do a lot with a little class. But that's not who Sam Howell was, and that's not who Sam Howell is at this point of his career. I think Sam Howell can be an incredible football player if he has everything go right around him. The issue is Washington is not that type of organization and has not been that type of organization in my lifetime. Now, that's not without saying that Sam Howell does have some issues. I'm not here saying he's a perfect quarterback. I'm not here saying that Washington failed him in a sense of he was perfect and they were not. No. There are some issues that Sam Howell has in his game that essentially hurt him and his stock with Washington. And those issues were bigger than the low end was bigger than the upside. And that's an issue when you're essentially the face of a franchise. I don't know how he's going to be in Seattle. I don't even know if he's going to start in Seattle or play in Seattle, seeing as though they still have Geno Smith. But I guess moving forward for Sam Howell, which again, I wish the best for any player. Moving forward, it's important for a team, it's important for a franchise, it's important for a player to understand exactly who they are and what they have. And Sam Howell was viewed as a franchise changing, or was promoted, was touted as a franchise changing player. Even though he was picked later in the draft, the fact of, again, you're talking about an organization that is starving for something to latch on to be happy about. Seeing as though Washington hasn't been happy, hasn't been relevant, hasn't been good in a while. So you're talking about a fan base that is starving to latch on to someone, to latch on to something. And
it was pretty much promoted that Sam Howell was that guy. And how quickly people realized, oh, he ain't, should be studied. So I wish nothing but the best for Sam Howell. Again, I don't think all of the reasons why it didn't work in Washington was on him and or on the franchise. I just think that when you're talking about a marriage, both parties have to blend. And it seemed like one party needed the other much more than they realized. I think Sam Howell represented much more than he thought going into it. And I think that he was touted as much more than he could provide. And that's why I don't think it worked out in Washington. So we'll see. But shout out to him. Shout out to Seattle. I wish nothing but the best for both. A move that I want to talk about. You want to know how you know that Patrick Mahomes is great. Take out the Super Bowls. Take out the MVPs. You want to know just how you know as a player that Patrick Mahomes is great. He's gotten to that point in his career where he's viewed as, if you attach anybody to him, he is going to get the best out of him. That is almost a cheat code when we talk about certain players. Only the greats, and I mean the greats of the greats, have that aura around them. Like LeBron James. People say that LeBron James is going to get the best out of anybody. You don't hear that too often in sports. But when you're so great, if you, any piece that you add is looked on, is looked as a positive attachment. The name Hollywood Brown, the name Hollywood Brown, the name Marquise Brown, at this point is bigger than the production that we've gotten on the field. I mean, whether we talk about his time in Baltimore, whether we talk about his time in Arizona, the name is bigger than the production. I mean, he's only had 1,000-yard season, and that was 2021. He just hasn't been the piece that he was projected to be coming out of college. And when we look at someone like Washington, and we look at Baltimore, I'm sorry, and we look at someone like Zay Flowers, a lot of people thought Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown, would be what Zay Flowers was to the Baltimore Ravens, and he ultimately wasn't. And people thought that he could possibly be a solid number one or number two option in Arizona, and he wasn't that either. Now, you can say Arizona, that was, you can put an asterisk on that probably because, you know, Kyler Murray was injured a lot of times, but still, the name has been bigger than the production when we talk about Hollywood Brown. Well, Hollywood Brown, I think, signed a one-year deal with the Kansas City Chiefs. And you're hearing a lot of people say that this makes the Chiefs the quote-unquote scariest offense in the league because they have Hollywood Brown now. I promise you that that sentiment is not because of Hollywood Brown. That viewpoint is solely because of Patrick Mahomes and what we saw this year from Patrick Mahomes. Again, we've talked about this ad nauseum. The wide receiver core that he had was not good. Rashee Rice, he was by far the best wide receiver on the field, and he wasn't that good until the end of the season. And quiet as it's kept, Travis Kelce had a down year. And even with all that, they won the Super Bowl. Mahomes has put himself in that class where you put anyone, any sliver of talent is monumental for him. Because he is going to get the best out of you. We saw that with Valdez-Scantling. We saw that with Mecole Hardman. Mind you, you see, Mecole Hardman didn't work in New York, but he was pretty much perfect for the Chiefs. I wonder why. So we don't have to stay on this long, but what I'm saying is, I agree with everyone saying that Marquise Brown is a great addition for this Chiefs team, especially a Chiefs team that still have question marks on their entirety of their wide receiver core, seeing as though, you know, Valdez-Scantling was released. And we hope that Rashee Rice can make that leap into a number one receiver. But the reason why I wanted to highlight this is because the praise isn't mainly for, or isn't because Marquise Brown. Because we've seen Marquise Brown, as unfortunate as it is, I know this is going to sound like hate, but it's not. Marquise Brown is an average quarter or average wide receiver. 1,000-yard season. Outside of that, he does not have an 800-yard season outside of that 1,000-yard season. The most yards he's had outside of that 1,000-yard season is 769. So in every metric, he is an average quarter or wide receiver. But with Patrick Mahomes, that average can be extraordinary because of who you're playing with. So that's why I kind of wanted to highlight that. It was just like, it was interesting. And with that, obviously, we're still in the crux of it. And there are still big names that are out there. There are still teams that can get considerably better. But what I want to do is, so far, I want to talk about the winners and the losers of free agency so far. Again, there's a lot of names still out there. There's a lot of free agents that can be signed. So this list, you can say, is fluent. So I'm just talking about right now. And I want to start with some of the winners. Because I think that there are some glaring winners and there are some glaring losers, and we'll talk about it. Let's start with a winner. We kind of touched on him briefly earlier, and that is the Atlanta Falcons. I think that it was important for the Falcons to you have a new coach, you have a new regime coming in, you have a lot of youth. It's very important that the captain of this ship is not only a leader, but is a person that people can look up to and listen to. And I think that Kirk Cousins, again, I'm not saying Kirk Cousins is such an elite quarterback, but Kirk Cousins is a leader of men, is a person that, as we've seen everywhere he's gone, unlike some other quarterbacks, you've heard nothing but glowing reports about him. And I think one thing that is underrated about sports is you need someone to teach you how to win. The most important aspect about a vet is not just the fact that they're still good and they still have some game in their tank.
they teach younger players how to win. Everyone is talented in the league, whatever league we're talking about. Everyone is talented. That doesn't mean that everyone knows how to win. Now, I'm not saying win a Super Bowl or win an NBA championship or win a Stanley Cup or whatever. What I'm saying is teach you how to win in this, or teach you how to be a pro. And I think getting someone like Kirk Cousins is perfect for that. Showing, you know, how to, that's one thing that we've talked about when discussing the Falcons for a while. It's like they don't really have, yeah, you had Calais Campbell last year, but on the offense side of the ball, they don't really have a veteran. They don't really have someone that can steer the ship when things go awry. And I think that Kirk Cousins will be perfect for that. So I have the Falcons as a big winner. Another team that I have as a winner is the Washington Commanders. Going into free agency, they had one of the highest cap. Well, they had the most, let's say this, they had the most to work, one of the teams that had the most to work with cap money. They had a abundance of riches when we talk about free agency money that they could have used. And what you see, you've seen this a lot with Washington, and I've lived through this. They'll use a lot of their money on the big name. Like, they'll try to go get an Albert Haynesworth. They'll try to go get a Clinton Portis. They'll try to go get a Donovan McNabb. And while the name is big, the game, especially at that point of their career, doesn't really warrant that. So going into this free agency, and that's what you're used to, now also seeing that you want to know, when you have a new GM, new owner, new head coaching staff, you want to see their imprint. So it was very interesting and very important that they would get on a good track and they would make the smart moves. And I think that they've done just that. Austin Eckler, while yes, he did have a down year last year, a lot of it can be due to injury. A lot of it can due to the fact that he was worried about getting a contract. So I think Austin Eckler, especially losing Antonio Gibson, is a big get. A lot of people are saying Bobby Wagner is well above or well beyond his prime years. I don't think he's in his prime anymore, obviously, but he had numbers similar and some better to Fred Warner last year, who a lot of people, including myself, think is one of the league's best linebackers in the league. So I think getting Bobby Wagner, especially when you see how poor Washington's defense was last year, I think that's good. I think getting Zach Ertz is good. I think getting Dante Fowler is good. Frankie Luvulu, I think I said your name wrong. I apologize, my guy. I just think Washington was smart. They didn't really go for the big names, but they did go from the underrated value. And especially when you have the number two overall pick and more than likely you're going to pick a quarterback, you want to be surrounded by veterans and you want to be surrounded by talented players, because you don't just want, you know, you don't just want them to fend for themselves, kind of like they did with Sam Howe, with a bunch of people that just don't fit and a bunch of, you know, lack of a better term, role players. And I think that Washington did a really good job, and they still have moves that could still be made. So I think Washington is a winner. I think the biggest winner, honestly, is the Houston Texans. The Texans kind of knocked when you look at the Texans now than they were before free agency started, honestly, they were much ahead of schedule this year, seeing as though they made it to the second round of the playoffs. But when you look now, you get Danielle Hunter, who was one of the best defensive players that you could have gone. You have Denico Autry, man. They look, you re-signed Noah Brown. They made some moves, man. They were active, they were busy.
And they, yeah, I think getting honestly one of the big defensive free agents that was out there, which is Danielle Hunter, especially on a team that kind of struggled defensively, especially stopping the run, I think that is a home run. You also get Tony Pollard. We don't know, not Tony Pollard. I'm sorry. You get Joe Mixon. I think that's really good as well. You help with your running game. You give CJ Stroud another weapon. I think that this Texans did an incredible job at free agency, man. So I got the Texans as probably the biggest winner. I have the Baltimore Ravens as a winner. I know a lot of people are saying, how are you going to say the Ravens are a winner when a lot of their players are free agents? Cool. Well, yeah, but you did get Derrick Henry, who I think works perfectly for the Ravens. You got Justin Madubuike. You re-signed him. He was probably the most important piece that you needed to re-sign this offseason. I understand that you lost, Patrick Queen. I understand that you lost Tyler Yoit. I understand that you lost, Geno Stone or John Simpson. I get that. But you got who you needed to get. You secured Justin Madubuike. You got Derrick Henry. And on top of that, you still have enough. We'll see what the market holds, but you still have enough to possibly keep Jadeveon Clowney, to possibly keep Kyle Van Noy. If you're able to keep those, you already have Roquan Smith on the defense. You already have Kyle Hamilton still there. And you have Justin Madubuike, I think, is going to be great. Losing Patrick Queen was big, especially to the Pittsburgh Steelers. But if you're able to keep Jadeveon Clowney and Kyle Van Noy, and all signs are looking like there's a possibility that you could, that just adds on to it, man. So I think Baltimore, especially going in with some of the most free agents, now they still have a lot of free agents, so we'll see what happens. But I think that they were winners because they were able to secure who they needed to secure, which was Justin Madubuike, and they got Derrick Henry. So I think the Ravens is a winner. And the last winner that I'll talk about is the Pittsburgh Steelers. I will say this. I'm going to call them a winner because they got Russell Wilson. And you're much better at the quarterback position than you were, obviously, before getting Russell Wilson. And I think, at that point, it's an automatic win. But I will say this. I was teetering putting Pittsburgh in the losers column. Again, the biggest reason why I'm putting them in the winners column is because they got Russell Wilson. I think that is going to be a perfect marriage, especially when we talk about veteran, hopefully leadership, especially when we talk about some of the pieces that they have, especially when we talk about, they also got Patrick Queen. I think that was huge. I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers have a good shot of being really good this year. I don't know. It's still the Ravens is still tough. But you got Patrick Queen and you got Russell Wilson. You did overpay a little bit to get Patrick Queen, but I understand. He's a Pro Bowl. He's a Pro Bowl linebacker. I get it. But one of the biggest reasons why I was teetering on putting them in losers because the Pittsburgh Steelers is the one team in the league that I don't think has adapted to the new age as well as they should have. I don't think the Pittsburgh Steelers have adapted to how you win football games. This is yet another year where the Pittsburgh Steelers will probably go into the season spending the most money on defense. This is yet another year where the Pittsburgh Steelers allow a very young, very talented wide receiver to leave. or trade. This is yet another year where, outside of Russell Wilson, which I do think is the biggest reason why they're on my winners, but outside of Russell Wilson, they haven't prioritized the offense at all in free agency. In fact, in free agency so far, they've gotten a punter, they've gotten a linebacker, they've gotten a cornerback, they've gotten a safety, they got another safety, they got a defensive tackle, and they got a quarterback. Again, I understand you have some young pieces. You have George Pickens. He's really good. You have Pat Freiermuth. He's really good. You have Najee Harris. He's really good. But how many times are you going to focus on the defense side of the ball that's already really good and not really put much focus to the offense and wonder why your offense continues to sputter almost every season? When you look at the last few Super Bowl winners, what do they have in common? They have a top-tier offense. Whether that's the Chiefs, whether that's the Rams, whether that's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when they had Tom Brady. If you don't address your offense, you're going to be left behind. It doesn't matter who you have on the defense side of the ball. And it just seems like year after year after year, which I like what they do. And I, again, I know it sounds like it, but they are in the winners column. The Pittsburgh Steelers could possibly be left behind again for another year because they do not do, or they don't put an emphasis or a focus where they should, and that's the offense. Again, I think this is the third or fourth year in a row, I think, that the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to go into this regular season with the most money spent on the defense. And while that may be good in year 2000 to 2010, that's not winning you a Super Bowl in 2024. But you get Russell Wilson, so I think you're a winner. And I know that sounded crazy, so let me go over to the losers. Because it just sounds like I just kicked the Pittsburgh Steelers back in, which I didn't mean to, but it had to be said. You know what I mean? With winners, there are losers. And obviously, like I said, things are flowing. Things can change. Free agency just started pretty much this week. I think the physical NFL season started this week. So obviously these can change, but as we speak right now, I would consider these teams losers. The first one I want to talk about is the Panthers. I'm starting to really feel terrible for Bryce Young and the man. I talk about the Chicago Bears a lot. The Panthers are showing a masterclass on how not to help their young quarterback. We saw last year how much they struggled and how essentially bad they were. They won, what, 2 games last year? And to go from that and you see how much the offense struggled and you get rid of good offensive pieces, you don't really address offensive pieces. The best offensive piece I think you got was Deontay Johnson in a trade with the Steelers. I mean, you have a guard, okay. You have another guard, okay. You have a Sean Robinson defense. You have Joe Lewis defense. You have you didn't really address anything. Oh man, it's gonna be yet another bad year in my opinion for the Panthers. And it's like they're showing how not to help a young quarterback, especially a young quarterback that we saw just a year ago need help. That's why I say all the time, man, fit matters. If you don't put your org, if you don't put your players in the best position, they're not going to succeed. I know it sounds crazy, but yeah, they're not. And it doesn't seem like the Panthers are anywhere closer to succeeding, especially after the moves that they've already made in free agency and the people that they've lost. You trade Brian Burns to the Giants, where a couple months earlier you could have had, what, a 2 first-round picks or a first and a second-round pick? But yet you essentially get a 3rd and a 5th or something like that. It's like, what are you doing? Yeah, man, the Panthers are a loser, man. It just sucks. Cause as someone obviously from the outside looking in, you can tell where there's issues. And there are issues with the Panthers. I don't understand how it's glaring from the outside looking in, but it's not that, I don't know. Another loser I'm going to have to say are the Cowboys. I think talent-wise, they are still amongst one of the best teams in football when we talk about talent-wise. But the way that the Dallas Cowboys have ended their season the last few years, you can't tell me that they don't need improvement in areas. You also lose Tony Pollard, so you can't tell me that you don't need a running back. And when you hear that Derrick Henry didn't even get a call from the Dallas Cowboys, it's crazy. Or when you see all the people that they're losing from the offensive line, from the defense, it's crazy that they haven't really made any moves. I think they got Eric Kendricks, but outside of that, they haven't really made any moves. Especially when you see what Washington's doing, especially when you see what the Eagles are doing. I don't understand how you can rest on your laurels and then go and tell people that you're all in. It doesn't make sense. We talked about how important it is for Dak to have a reliable running back. And not only have running backs thrived, whether we talk about Saquon, Derrick Henry, DeAndre Swift, Austin Eckler, they've thrived in this free agency. You don't have one. You have, I think, a 5-3 running back. Unless it's Darren Sproles, that ain't doing much. So I don't know, man. Obviously, things can change, but I don't know. We talked about the Falcons, and we talked about them getting Kirk Cousins. Well, with the Falcons getting Kirk Cousins, that leaves the Vikings needing a quarterback. And when you could have had Justin Fields, I understand that this is a divisional rival, but you have to understand, you got to do what's best for your team. Instead of getting Justin Fields, which I guess he would probably cost a little more, you go out and get Sam Darnold. Now, I was on the same train that a lot of people are on. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. I was on that train of Sam Darnold needs to be just in the right situation to win. Well, I don't know how many times you're going to get put into a different situation and not come out successful for me to be like, yeah, he just needs the right situation. I've given up faith on Sam Darnold. I think we've seen the best of Sam Darnold, and the best of Sam Darnold just ain't that good. Now, I am welcome and happy to be wrong. If I'm wrong, let me be wrong. I'm fine with that. However, I don't feel like I'm wrong. And if that's the case, you go from Kirk Cousins to Sam Darnold. That doesn't seem like an improvement. You also lose Nell Hunter. It's not the best. not the best when we talk about free agency. Like, I understand that you got Jonathan Greenyard. That's pretty good. And you get Aaron Jones, but I also don't like how you did. You did get Andrew Van Winkle, or Van Ginkle. But yeah, no, it's. It's going to be tough. I just don't, especially when you're in need of a quarterback. Yeah, no. Nah. You get Sam Darnold's your best option. I don't know. Another loser is the Bills. You see all these moves, and a lot of the you lose Gabe Davis, you lose Leonard Floyd. Like, you lose a lot of important pieces, and you're going to continue to lose a lot of important pieces. I understand the cap situation and everything, but, like, one of the biggest issues we've seen is the pieces that they surrounded Josh Allen with has been serviceable, just not in the playoffs. Well, you're losing pieces and you're not really adding many. I don't know. Like, it's going to be tough. I understand that they went into free agency was one of the worst free agent or cap situations in the league. But on top of that, you still have Stephon Diggs, and I don't know why he's still on the team. Not saying he's trash or anything, but he probably hurt the cap more than anyone on that team, and you're letting Gabe Davis go, and you're letting it just – it doesn't make much sense. I don't know. I think they think because they have Josh Allen, who is undoubtedly one of the best quarterbacks in the league, that they're just going to overcome everything, but that's not the case at all. I don't know. I have the Bills as a loser. And the Chargers, man. The Chargers – I understand it. Trust me, I understand it. When you have, you know, Jim Harbaugh, when you have Harbaugh coming in, you know, from Michigan, and he has a track record of winning, I get it. But they're tearing down everything. I mean, Austin Eckler gone, Mike Williams gone, Keenan Allen gone, Jared Everett gone. Like, they're tearing it down to the studs. And they're restructuring and keeping Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa. I get it, you know, but yeah. You have to trust what Harbaugh is going to do, seeing as though he has a track record, but again, it doesn't really seem like it's going to bode well, you know? Like, it doesn't. And obviously, we'll see, but we've been talking about Justin Herbert not having a lot of weapons. Well, he definitely don't got a lot of weapons right now. His quarterback, or his wide right now, as we speak, his wide receiver one is Quentin Johnston, who is notorious for dropping passes last year. So I don't know what's going to happen. But with winners, there's losers, and those are some of my losers. And again, there's still interesting names, and some of the winners could end up being a loser in the future. We'll talk about it, but there's still a lot of free agents, a lot of big names out there. Which I think is interesting, because now that I'm thinking back on it, when I talked about Marquise Brown, the Marquise Brown signing came like a day after or a couple hours after Odell Beckham, or then coming out saying Odell Beckham wants to play with the Chiefs and get like a big contract. I don't know if Odell Beckham's going to get that big contract that he's looking for, but seeing as though how his last two stints kind of ended. But we'll see. Oh, we'll see. Lastly, before we go, we have the unpopular topic of the day. And there's people that's questioning something that I wanted to talk about and address. So we're right now in the thick of conference play, the conference tournaments pretty much end today.
And Selection Sunday is obviously tomorrow. And you're hearing a lot of people question, why does it seem like the women's college basketball is getting more excitement, getting more press than the men's? Why is there a focus on the women's March Madness? So why is there more excitement with the women's March Madness than there is with the men's this year? And what's interesting to me is how simple of an answer this is and how nobody is talking about it. This is the most simplest answer I think I could ever give. One of the biggest reasons why basketball is more popular in a sense of social media, more popular in a sense of globally than football, is because basketball has found a way and understand quickly how important it is not just to promote the teams, but to promote players. Because you can see the players, it's easier to promote them. And you understand that while you have some of the diehard fans who's going to love a team and always going to love a team, majority of the fans of a sport, especially basketball, like the players more than the teams. So what basketball has done, what the NBA has done, what the WNBA hasn't done a good job at, which I would hope that they do better at, is they have focused in on promoting their players more than their teams. And that has done, I mean, you see, while yes, football and the NFL is still king in the United States, you see globally, football is getting killed by basketball globally, because obviously football is only played in, you know, Canada and United States and stuff, but players are promoted more. Tom Brady is much more popular in the United States, and LeBron James is way more popular everywhere else in the world. So when you bring it back down to the NCAA, you hear people scream NIL. You hear people scream there isn't really a great basketball or men's basketball team this year. You hear people scream, the product is bad. No. There's more parity in college sports than there's ever been. You can attach NIL to that and recruiting to that. But the biggest reason, in my opinion, that the women's NCAA is more popular right now or this year than the men's is simple. They are promoting their players more than the men are. The men are promoting their... Think about this. I'm sure a casual basketball fan knows who Caitlin Clark is. I'm almost sure a casual basketball fan does not know who the best player in college basketball men's side is. In fact, I'm almost sure that the casual basketball fan does, in fact, hold up. Hey, Brittany. Yeah. Can you tell me who is going to win the men's player of the year this year?
Caleb Love.
Exactly. No. The casual fan does not know that Zach Edey has been by far the best basketball player this year. But I'm sure the casual fan does know who Caitlin Clark is, or who Angel Reese is, or who Juju Watkins is. Or they can name a bunch of people on, you know, Camila Cardoza, who they know who she is. If you don't promote the right way, you're going to get what you're going to get out of promotion. Like, look.
I think that college basketball is in a great place. I think that when you have so many, a vast of great players, Brittany just said Caleb Love. Caleb Love has been great for Arizona. RJ Davis has been great for UNC. There's been some great basketball players, but the NCAA doesn't really promote their players as much as they promote the teams. The women's side has promoted their players more because they understand, while yes, Iowa is a good team, it's easier to promote Caitlin Clark than it is to promote Iowa. While yes, you know what's also proof about this? I watch basketball every single day. I know more about Juju Watkins and what she's done this year than Bronny James, who plays for the same school. That's no offense to him. That's just promotion. I understand that USC wasn't really good this year due to injuries and everything, but they promoted Juju way better than they promoted Bronny James. And that's how I know who more than likely is going to win the Women's Player of the Year in Caitlin Clark over Zach Edey, who is about to be a two consecutive Player of the Year. Yet, nobody knows him. The women's side has, at least NCAA, understood this year the importance of attaching themselves to the name of the players. And the men's did not. And that's how we see, come March, right now, there's more excitement with the women's side than there is the men's. I know who I forgot her last name. I apologize. I think she is the player for Stanford. I know, Georgia Amore, Elizabeth Kitley. I know these players because they're promoted to me. I can't name you outside of my school, because I know everyone from North Carolina, but I can't name you who have been like the 10 best players in college basketball on the men's side this year. But I can name you who has been the 15 best players in college basketball with the women's. It's about marketing and promotion. The NCAA women's side has adapted, for lack of a better term, how the NBA promotes their players. The NCAA on the men's side has not. And that's why we look up. And at least for this year, the casuals know more about the men's side than they do the women's. I'm sorry. They know more about the women's side than they do the men's. And there's more interest on the women's side than they do the men, than there is the men's. It's about promotion. Promote your players. And I promise you, you'll get a good return. And there you have it. That's been today's episode of the Unpopular Podcast. I truly, truly, truly appreciate you guys. Again, I'm sorry I'm sick. If this recording sounded horrible, I apologize. I just didn't want to leave you guys without an episode. Seeing in about 2 or 3 weeks, I will be out for about 2 episodes because I'm going on vacation. So I didn't want to leave you guys with an episode, even though I do sound terrible. So I do truly apologize, but I thank you guys. If you want to pop the podcast shirt, hoodie, sweater, long sleeve, joggers, the link is in the description below. I have multiple different colors, multiple different designs. Get your Unpopular Podcast merch today. Also, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. Man, I'm trying to reach as many subscribers as I can. I appreciate everyone that has subscribed. I appreciate everyone that's going to subscribe. Tell a friend to tell a friend to subscribe if you like the content. Also, if you listen to the DSPs, I understand that there's some people that only watch on YouTube and there's some people that only listen to the DSPs, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud. Follow, subscribe. It definitely means a lot. You guys are just as important as my YouTube following. So please subscribe wherever you listen. It means so, so much to me. Also, follow the socials. Follow Instagram. Follow TikTok. I put stuff pretty much daily there. That's where we can debate. You can reach me pretty much faster there. Follow the socials. I post every day. And I thank you guys. Until next time, much love. We'll be right back.